Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comics, books, and comics related, brought to you by the Panel and Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Chris Casso. Cole Hornaday.
Hey there.
And today we are honored to be joined by professional collector, Mr. Tom Stewart. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
So, Cole, I'm going to let us...
You gonna pass the ball to me?
I'm gonna give us into the capable hands of Mr. Cole Hornaday. I was trying to remember that phrase. Take it away.
Tom Stewart is a local actor, artist, musician, playwright, professional nerd, recovering collector and dealer, and he's had a lifetime of experience of being a nerd and been very successful at it. I actually go to Tom when I need research help for Panel Jumper episodes because I know, A, he's got the facts, B, he's got the resources for the facts, and C, he's always going to debate those facts with me until we whittle them down into something that, you know, Ben will get his hands on and tear apart. But no, seriously, yeah. I'm really grateful that I have Tom in my life because he does often hand me stacks of things. Also, he's a collector of many, many things beyond comics and toys. He also is into antiques, movie posters, guitars, presidential memorabilia, particularly the Kennedys. And I have gone to him at least one time for props for the Panel Jumper episode.
Oh, yeah. My old radio.
Yeah.
Oh, that was yours.
Yes.
Thank you. That was an awesome radio.
Yeah, it was the perfect touch. So recently, Tom had a autobiographical collector piece published in the premiere issue of Retrofan from Tomorrow's Publishing. And Retrofan, I'll just give you a little bit of a lowdown on this magazine. It is the perfect fan magazine for people, males of a certain age, namely nerds like Tom and I. So, like, on the cover is Lou Ferrigno talking about his experience playing the Incredible Hulk. And then we've got a really cool piece on why the Phantom, Lee Falk's Phantom, the Ghost Who Walks, doesn't work for American audiences, but for some strange reason works overseas. There are a series of articles on Mayberry and Lon Chaney Jr.
My favorite is your piece, Tom, but my second favorite piece.
We'll get to you soon.
Andy Mangels did this exhaustive article on Star Trek, the animated series, giving you all the background on Filmation's entering the project and how they went about developing the stories and getting the voiceover talent and blah, 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 blah. And I actually just rewatched all of these you can stream them on Amazon and I believe on Netflix too. And I actually, just to be frank with you, I sat there late at night watching them weeping with joy because they so successfully brought back this sensory recall of watching this show as a little boy, and I remember these episodes darn near verbatim, you know. So it was, I won't say it was a quite religious experience, but it was definitely full of a lot of joy.
The nostalgia was just a waterfall of emotion.
It was a cascade.
With James
doing all the background voices,
and James Doohan and George Takei, and but you know, poor old Walter Koenig, he got the shaft on this show too.
They couldn't afford him.
Yeah, so they had him write one episode, which I didn't realize, and that was the bone that they threw Walter. He was the guy who played Chekhov, and he was supposed to be George Takei or Sulu's replacement while George was actually in the Green Berets with John Wayne. And they decided that the producers of the show decided they needed to find somebody that looked like, you know, one of the Beatles or Davy Jones. And then they got, you know this, right?
They got Walter Koenig with a wig.
With a wig, that's right. So let's, I want to, before we talk about your career as a collector, I want to talk with you about your career as a writer, a comic, a fan writer, and how you got involved in that.
Back through the mist of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Back to AOL and the forums there. You might remember that.
I can hear the dial-up.
Yeah,
sound
I think that happened to me.
The dial-up. Oh, man. A friend of mine put together this this website called the Gorilla City Gazette.
Good name.
Looking for writers. And so I wrote a column called The Basement, which was a weekly column of stuff that was basically off the top of my head. I did very little research except to turn around to my comic book collection and say, oh, let's talk about the 70s Joker series.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about this stuff. And then I wrote for some magazines that are thankfully dead.
No.
Gone. And some of them never even actually got published. And then I hooked up with John Cook, who was the editor of Comic Book Artist, the Eisner Award-winning Comic Book Artist, which was a fantastic magazine, and I wrote for their first issue. And the first issue was a tribute to Carmine Infantino's reign as editorial director during the late 60s. And Carmine was not happy with us. I can go into that story. That'll be fun.
You've blogged about it and you've told me about it in person, and it's a lengthy story that I think everybody deserves to hear. Can you give us the long and the short of it?
Well, we put this magazine together. John Cook, who was a starry-eyed fan, brilliant guy, sweet man, but loves comics to death. Sweet guy. And this was his tribute to Carmine, who he felt was wronged by the comic book industry. He was editorial director. Carmine was, after being a brilliant artist for many years. And then he went and was hired as publisher of the DC Comics, and then one afternoon was handed a cardboard box, told to clean out his desk and get the heck out of the building, and was replaced by Jeanette Kahn, who was there for many years. And so he was going to resuscitate Carmine's reputation with this magazine. And Carmine had a very prickly reputation, very litigious reputation. He sued a lot of people who he didn't like. He had an ongoing feud with Mark Ebener. Mark Ebener writes the News For Me blog and is producer and chief.
Wrote one of the better Jack Kirby biographies.
Yeah, he's still working on his doorstop one, which will be out next year, I hope.
Okay.
Mark, write it. Tired boy. And
so when
was not happy with this magazine and threatened to sue us.
Now, when Carmine was suing people, was he suing because he felt personally defamed, or was he suing on behalf of DC?
He was suing because he felt personally defamed. This is after DC had fired him.
Okay, all right.
So when someone would write an article saying, oh, Carmine canceled all the Jack Kirby books, and he says, yeah, I canceled them, and how dare you say that I didn't cancel them because of this and this and this. So he would threaten to sue. Mm-hmm. I don't think he ever actually did. He would just send these really oddly worded letters he claimed were from lawyers.
Just very knee-jerk reactions.
It was Carmine with the legal dictionary.
So then he came after you.
He came after me. I wrote an article about Batlash.
Right, the cowboy comic.
About the cowboy comic, which was, I love that comic. Mm-hmm. I talked to Nick Carty about that. I talked to Sergio Argonez. I talked to Denny O'Neill. Everybody had the same story except Carmine. Sergio said, well, they handed me the name and I came up with the character. Denny O'Neill says, well, they handed me Sergio's breakdowns and I came up with the dialogue. Nick Carty just says, hey, I got the breakdowns, I did the art, I love the series. Carmine says, no, I created everything. All that stuff was me. And, you know, even the stuff that was obviously from Sergio's family. Characters named after his father. No, that was all me. That was all Carmine. Well, I wanted to talk to Carmine about it, but unfortunately, he wasn't available because he's cranky. And he was going to do one interview, and that was with John Cook, and that was it. So, you know, we published the magazine. It was fine. And then he started sending threatening letters saying, who is this Tom Stewart? He didn't believe I existed. This obvious pseudonym, Tom Stewart. This comic savant.
Well, you got to admit, your name is kind of pseudonymic.
It is. It's pretty bland. It fits me, unfortunately.
No.
And he thought I was Mark Ebener in disguise.
Oh, okay.
He's obviously a disguise for this certain California so-called comics historian, which was a jab at Mark, because they'd been jabbing back and forth for years, mostly Carmine jabbing at Mark, and Mark's like, oh, please don't. So he sent me three different letters. Well, he sent the magazine three different letters and demanded they publish all three. The first one had about five or six paragraphs defaming me. And my response was, I stand by my sources. I'm a big fan. Thank you, Carmine, whatever. And the next letter was all about me. It was three pages all about me, calling me names, calling me everything.
All based on supposition, no?
All based on that I was not the person I said I was.
Okay.
Show yourself, sir.
Exactly. going to be somebody else. It'd be much cooler than, you know, Tom Stewart. I'm and so he sent a third letter. Mm. And at that point, I was at the San Diego Comic-Con. This would be 96, I think, okay. 97. The magazine had just come out. And Carmine was set to be there. He was guest of honor. This was his first convention in years. He hadn't been doing anything because he was really angry with the whole comic book industry. And he was going to show up, and I was told to hide myself whenever he would show up, hoping that he would forget about me because his memory would come and go. At this
point. Did he know what you looked like at this point?
He did not. He'd never met me. Thank
then
good.
Why hide?
Yeah.
Then exactly. Why am I hiding?
Because you'd still have to have a name, I guess, right? There'd have to be a whole thing.
Yeah, I'd have to, you know, turn my name tag.
That's right. Wear a mustache. Yeah. Why? I don't know.
So he'd come by the booth, and I'd like duck down. I had him sign my. I had him sign a piece of flash art I had. You know, twice up 1960s flash art that he did in Joe Giella. Signed as well, and had him sign my Batman from the 30s to the 70s without telling him who I was. Then I ran into Jim Amish, who is a who's an inker and artist, does a lot of stuff for Disney, Archie. And he says, well, you know, Tom, you're a better guy than that. You should confront him. I say, he's an old man. He goes, no, you should tell him who you are and how you feel. I'm like, fine, I'll tell him. So I found him at the All-Star Auction booth. He was sitting there signing, had a big grin on his face. And I come up to him and I shake his hand. I said, I'm such a fan of yours. I used to imitate your art all the time. He goes, oh, really? He goes, my name is Tom Stewart. And instantly, I thought he dropped something. Because his head went down to the ground and his arms went into his lap. And I said, please, sir. Stop writing letters. My mom really hates to read them. Actually, she never read any. He's like, well, you know, I really think I deserve to write this. Go ahead, write the last letter. John will publish it, and then let's end this, okay? All right. So he ends it, and he forgot all about me. I ran into him. 3 or 4 years later, had no idea who I was. Yeah. And I liked it. Because it caused me a lot of stress to know one of my childhood heroes, and I loved Infantino's art, was suing me or threatening to sue me.
Right. Mm-hmm. That would just mire me in depression.
And what's funny about it is everybody knew about what was going on before I did. Because they hadn't told me, they were waiting for me to show up. But all the pros in the hall knew what was going on and would come up to me. He said, yeah, I'm really sorry about what Carmine's doing. I'm like, what's Carmine doing? What's going on?
Because this is the days before the internet and social media had a stranglehold on our lives and our communication. So it was just this whisper network at San Diego Comic-Con.
Bat and Lash came up to me with a couple of copies of Wolf and Birds, his collection, says, here, I want you to have these. I'm like, oh, thanks, Bat. He goes, I'm really sorry what's going on. And he disappears. I'm like,
great pity comics.
Okay. Yeah,
I'll take the pity
comics. I got
comics.
So much free stuff.
Start some more feuds.
Exactly.
I had a better reputation than Carmine did. And that was based on two articles that I wrote in one magazine.
So let's talk about your life as a collector. And so for a while, you never had your own brick-and-mortar store. You worked at a lot of local shops.
I did.
And you also dealt a lot of comics online in like the early days of eBay.
That's true.
And now you have this astounding collection in your home. And I've been to Tom's home a couple of times, and it's a really, really a lovely place. Much unlike, you know, the hovel that I live in that's crammed with like three times the amount of crap that Tom has. So you have, you wrote this this piece that's apparently going to be part of a series or a regular department in Retro Fan called The Super Collector. And it just basically, so tell me how they pitch this to you? Did you pitch this to them? How that happened?
They pitched it to me.
Yeah.
I had actually talked with John Morrow of Two Morrows about a sort of overall fan magazine years ago.
Oh, really?
But I'm sure he forgot all about that because I'm pretty sure that this has Michael Urie written all over it.
Okay.
Michael is a great guy. He was editor for Back Issue when I wrote for Back Issue. I wrote dozens of articles. Sometimes it felt like the same article for Back Issue, especially on the DC implosion. I'm like, How many times can I start with, well, DC had all these books they were putting out, and then they died. And so he came to me and said, Tom, I know you have a bunch of stuff, right? I said, oh, yeah, I got a bunch of stuff. He goes, well, why don't you write about one of your collections? I'm like, well,
just one.
Which one? Comic books, guitars, movies, autographs, what do you want? Mm-hmm. He goes, well, can you write an article about one of those? I said, yeah, I can write 10 articles. Well, why don't you write 10 articles? Write short little ones. And you got about a 3,000 limit. I'm like, 3,000 words, that's a lot. He goes, you can do
it.
I'm like, yeah, I can. Yeah. I can go on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, trust us, you can do it.
as you are now witnessing. And so I just picked a few collections. There were some collections I left out.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah, I collect more.
Yeah, at the end of the article, you're like, well, I could also do this. Oh, and yeah. It just like went on. Yeah, I didn't even get to those.
My poor wife.
Whom I've met and who is a lovely and incredible person, if for another reason than, you know, the fact that she puts up with you.
Well, but you've been collecting long before you met her, so she knew what she was buying into.
Yeah, she knew what she was getting herself in for.
Yeah, it was smaller back then. It was still in my mother's basement.
So what I love about this article is you do talk about the genesis of each of these collecting interests and how you came upon this particular thing, like, say, the murder mysteries and the Hardy Boys books. And
one collection will lead me to another collection, which leads me to another collection.
We're all nodding.
Collecting Little Boat.
Comics led me to toys.
There's a part in there where you mentioned, like, I got this one figure, but now I have to get the guy that goes with the figure. Oh, now yeah. I got to get the team.
He needs a costume.
Yeah.
And then he needs Robin, right?
Yeah. Then he needs the Batmobile.
But then he also needs some villains. And then he needs, you know.
And then I need him to battle Captain Kirk. So
I don't know how many collections I've started with that precise point of flawed logic. It's like, I'll just get the Uncanny X-Men. And the villains.
It's the enabling logic.
Yes. Yeah.
It's the one
exactly
that lets you start it. Because you think that you're going to stop there. Think in quick.
You described earlier that he's a recovering collector. I don't think that's a real thing.
Oh, no, you're right.
Well, when I started my Captain Action
collection. Once a collector, always a collector.
I would buy stuff in lots. You know, like Captain Action lot on eBay. And yep. I'd buy all this crap and it'd be like, there's a bunch of G.I. Joe stuff. Because, well, I should get a G.I. Joe figure. So just put this stuff on them. Well, I should get the ones I remember as a kid. But I straddled the eras.
Yes.
From, like, you know, the clean-shaven warrior, you know, army G.I. Joe to killer mercenary G.I. Joe. Mm-hmm. So I had to get both of those. And then I had to get the ones with the Kung Fu grip, because you got to have the Kung Fu grip ones. Mm-hmm. And then before I knew it, I had 150 G.I. Joe figures.
Oh, dear.
All with the different sets. And
so I know that for a couple of years you've been writing a play about Bobby Kennedy.
I have, yeah.
Yeah. And now, what came first, your interest in collecting the Kennedy memorabilia or the play?
Probably the interest in the Kennedy memorabilia. I've been a Kennedy fan since I was a little boy.
Okay.
And I used to, they used to hire me back in the Tri-Cities to do Kennedy on the radio.
Oh, is that right?
Really? Yeah.
Is that how you became an actor, Tom?
No, I became an actor because I want to shut the heck up.
All right. You brought it up. Give us some Jack.
Oh, some Jack, huh? Well, Jack and Bobby are different, of course. Jack is a little slower, a little lower, and was much more used to talking in public. We shall take this nation forth to a new frontier. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and to do the other things, not because it is easy, but because it is hard. So that's Jack down there.
I knew Bobby as well.
Awesome.
Bobby always talked like he had a bus to catch or he wasn't going to live very long.
Ooh, ouch.
He would say, people see things in awe and ask why. I dream of things that never were and ask why not.
All right.
Nice.
Yeah, I do impressions.
Well, this is why I wanted to have Tom on the show, because his art overlaps with his compulsions, overlaps with his art, and you know, I thoroughly enjoy his company.
A bag of marbles dropped on a marble floor.
Oh man, can I steal that metaphor?
Oh, go ahead. I use it all the time.
I know what you mean though about getting one thing you needed to get like the rest of them, because I collect baseball cards, and like when I was a kid, like
dark and dangerous path, my friend.
Well, tell me about it. But that's because, you know, I was a kid collecting baseball cards in the worst era to collect baseball cards,
the
late 80s and early
90s. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I still have all those, and I discovered that it's really easy to buy those baseball cards on eBay. You're only paying for shipping. So I'm like, okay, well, I got to go through and get and buy boxes of them and sit on my bed and up and open up baseball card packs and complete the sets that I have. And then Cole got me into this habit of going and buying bags of baseball cards from Goodwill or Value Village. And so I get something, oh, it has like 10 cards from this one set I never had. Well, now I got to collect that set. Mm-hmm. See, 30 years later.
Doubles and triples of everything.
Part of my love language is to give people stuff I found at thrift stores. Now, Chris has managed to selectively eliminate a lot of the superfluous stuff in his life. So he's a really hard nerd to shop for. But, you know, God love Ben and Nicole, because I'm always bombarding them with, this, don't you? You need this. You need this. You need this.
And so. Mostly it's true. So.
Is it true?
About like 99% of the time, it's true.
I mean, I haven't texted Ben photos of baseball cards from Goodwill for a while.
Well, you've got him going now.
Yeah, right? You don't need to. Yeah.
Teach a man to fish.
And build him a library. Yeah.
The bag of like 88 Ken Griffey Jr. senior or Ken Griffey senior cards from
Value Village that I went back to retrieve three times because I kept missing that when the store closed because of the holiday. Yeah, and I was just so certain that was going to be a boon for you, absolute boon. Nope, it was chaff.
Yeah, whatever.
Total chaff.
I put it into the spreadsheet. So that brings me to my question for you, Tom.
Yes, sir.
So you have all this stuff. Do you have it cataloged? Or do you just know what you... Because, you know, all my stuff is easily cataloged. Everything has a number, a year, a make, a model, a name. You know, I can make spreadsheets for that easily. Do you have a run... Do you know what is in your collection?
Do you have it insured?
Yeah. I do not. I can't tell you how many times I'm digging through my comic books and find doubles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I hate that because that means I blew $10 at some convention that I didn't need to spend. I could have spent it on something else.
Well, good grief. At least it was only $10.
I have two Lonesome Rider movie one sheets from the 50s with Randolph Scott. I'm like, dang it. How did I do that? Oh, I can't remember. Because I'm old and I can't remember things anymore.
Well, do you feel a sense of glee when you discover that? Like, hey, I can put this on eBay and make some money back.
Usually my niece, Jade, who blames me for turning her into a nerd.
She was a nerd already. She was predisposed.
She usually ends up getting my doubles.
Oh, even the movie posters?
No, not the movie posters.
Oh, just the comics.
I'll probably use those as trade with some of the people I get movie posters from. But, yeah, I usually just give her the comics. I bet her, I think it was $20, she could not get through Batman Odyssey.
Oh. You mean.
I know.
Sir, you are cruel.
She made it.
And
she,
what? Oh, wow.
Took her four times.
Bless her little heart.
Four times.
I don't think anyone at this table did. Did you make it through Batman Odyssey?
I made it mostly through.
Yeah.
Like the last two, three issues.
I just made a fan fiction about it in my mind. I never read it.
Yeah, banana sequences all the way.
The banana.
We actually devoted too much of one episode talking about, was it the eggs and the bananas?
Mostly the bananas. Mostly
the eggs. Yeah, he was drinking those eggs.
Too much, though? I don't know.
You guys PO'd me for my tangents. Man, that episode was an entire tangent devoted to the waste of air that was Batman Odyssey. So needless to say, no, I have never read it. So
I've got an app idea for anybody out there who knows how to program.
Go.
And it's for collectors. And if you're at a convention or something, you take a picture of what you're thinking of buying and it tells you if you already have one.
Well, that's a lovely idea there, Ben, but that someone's got to catalog all that crap for you first.
Well,
that would be a job for Google, probably.
Help me to help you. Okay.
There is something close-ish to that.
Is there?
Called collectors, like with a Z at the end.
It's got to be something.
Yeah, and so you can. It has pictures of everything you have.
Wasn't that just comics, though, or is it for other collecting things?
I think there's some. There's other things you have to pay for.
Oh, okay.
But I think you can apply it to DVD collections.
Yeah.
Yeah. For for comics, it's really great because you can make want lists and stuff like that. You can see covers, and it's really good database.
Yeah, you can even mark if you read it already or not.
Yeah,
you know,
so. Yeah, there's a lot of notes you can put in there.
It'd be great to have something where you can like take a random angle of a toy, and it'll be like, oh, that's what this is, and you have three of them. Don't buy this.
I actually love the idea because I am to that point where it's like, I finally went up to Bobacon, the Star Wars, or at least the action figure toy collectible store, clear up there in the Great White North of Everett, Washington. Mm-hmm. It's been there for like 5, 6, 7
years.
Yeah,
I don't believe Everett exists. Yeah.
Everett's been there for a long time.
Well, I went to this store and because I'd heard about it for so long, and I was wandering around the store. I had my little checklist, but I was looking at things going, wow, that's worth a lot of money. I cannot remember if I had that or not. Mm-hmm. I cannot remember at all. So it was an interesting trip. I was a really good boy. I didn't spend but a couple of dollars.
All right.
Look, it's hard.
Yeah.
A toy collector in a large toy store.
If I would have it.
Yeah.
But now I start buying them like in, you know, at conventions in bulk. So I haven't been able to read everything. So I ended up buying two of something.
Right.
Yep.
And I'm, again, old.
We understand. So do you, just to wrap up on talking about your article and
my brilliant article.
And yeah, it was a brilliant article. I really enjoyed it. I'm thinking and talking at the same time, which we know is a terrible, terrible mistake.
Most senators cannot do this.
They should go to acting school. They should go to Shakespeare school. is there something that you, at this moment in time, are pondering, you know, loosing the collector urge onto, and but have not done so yet? Is there something you? Is there still? As collectors, we feel voids in our souls, right? So,
what more do you need?
What more do you need, Tom?
I ask myself that all the time.
What void in your heart exists?
Well, you know what's really cool? Old TVs. Like from the 1940s and 50s, those are really cool. I have no space for them. I don't know how to
That's a lot of space.
No, you don't. Those are big.
No. Yeah. I will speak on behalf of your wife and say, no, you don't.
You know, I got to dabble in old radios.
Yeah, and I'm grateful for that. Yeah,
kind of fixing those up occasionally when I can.
Yeah, my uncle does that. He gets very, very ancient radios, and he refurbishes them. It's really, really cool.
So this is something we haven't given him credit for yet, is he does collect musical instruments, guitars, and refurbishes them. But one of the greatest pride and joys sits in his backyard. What year is it?
It's a 1967 Mustang convertible.
Ooh. Right. That he has in some way refurbished, rebuilt from stem to stern.
Well, when I got it, it smelled of old men, beer, and desperation.
Mm-hmm. And now it just smells
accurate.
Of desperation.
That's a Mustang.
And rust.
But it's a beautiful car, but you know every inch of that car because you've refurbished down to the...
I do. Yeah. I've had Michael Ramquist over. Uh-huh. We bled the brakes on it today.
Yeah.
I took it to an audition and almost lost a tire.
Because you didn't...
Because I was working on the... On the brakes, and I set it back down, and I forgot to tighten the lug nuts all the way because they were just finger tight.
Yeah.
And I'm driving down the road, and I hear the boom, 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 boom. I'm like, I know what that sound is. That's a tire about to come off. So I pulled over, and fortunately, I had my lug wrench in the trunk because guys with old cars carry parts and tools with them at all times. Yeah. So I was able to just tighten it back up and get to my audition, which I did not get.
Oh, well, next time.
Next time.
So,
they don't know what they're missing.
Do you have any other? Do you have any other articles in the pipeline? Any other pieces you're working on?
No, actually, I stopped writing for Tomorrow's and was working on a book, which has gone through two publishers now, and I have to write an index for it. It's about Robert E. Howard.
Oh, right.
And what happened to the properties of the Howard estate after Howard killed himself in 1936.
Right.
What happened to the rights to Conan and this whole big battle over it. In fact, it's a battle that lasts right around 200 pages without an index. So I got to finish that and get it published.
You need an intern.
I do.
We all need interns.
I need an unpaid intern.
Well, that's very cool. So you said it's gone through two publishers, and is that what's holding it up? Is your index?
Well, Hermes Press was going to put it out,
yeah.
And I signed an NDA with them. No, I didn't.
Oh.
They did not put it out, and that's another whole podcast I could talk to you
okay.
about. And Tomorrow's is actually wants to do it, but I put it on the back burner to finish Bobby, because I hope to get that up by next year.
Do you have a production company you're doing the Bobby show with?
It's me and Confrontational Theater, which right. is Bo Pritchard.
Right. right.
So Bo's producing and directing, and I am writing. And I gotta finish the script and acting in it. And we're shopping it around to theaters right now, but I can't talk about that.
Okay. Yet. Did you sign an NDA on that too?
No. No, I just run on at the mouth, as you guys have witnessed.
Nerd Renaissance man, Tom Stewart, folks.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to do a segment we always do here on the Perfect Bound podcast called Book Report, which is where we all talk about something that we've been reading this week. And you are welcome to join us if you've read a comic that you read recently that you really like, you want to talk about, but no pressure. Cole Horn today, what do you want to tell us about?
Oh, yeah, I wasn't ready. I was too busy jabbering on with Tom. Let's talk about, can you hand me that book there? Thank you. So two weeks ago, my dear friend Nicole Lamb texted me and said, you have to read this book. It'll appeal to you because you're a cat fan. And I know what you said. You said, I know you don't like manga.
Yeah.
But
try this book and let me know what you think.
Yeah. So it's called She and Her Cat, a story by Makoto Shinkai and art by Tsubasa Yamaguchi. I don't know if it's a part of a series or part of this particular book is part of a catalog of books about young professional women in Japan and their cats. It seems like it's part of a genre. Do you guys know anything about this?
There's a lot of cats in manga, but as far as I know, it was its own entity.
Okay.
As far as I know.
I did a little quick research, and yes, you're right, it was its own entity. It's actually based on an anime short from 1999 that was like only 5 minutes long, and then that became a TV series, a couple of films, and then ultimately, I guess we double back around to this book, which is published just very recent, in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming it was 2016.
That's the other way around from what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's true. It's really interesting how they do publish things in Japan and how the properties cross between TV and film.
Because sometimes it's like a novel, then it's a manga, then it's a TV show, or maybe it's a TV show, then it's a manga, then it's...
Well, I discovered that with the Ringu, with the Ring stories. Mm-hmm. When I first saw the American version of The Ring, knew that it was based on a Japanese film, but then when I started looking into it, it's actually a TV series, manga, multiple TV series, films produced in different countries. So the American film version was not the only version of the Ring cycle or the Ring. Anyway,
it's an ice cream topping and a floor guy.
This is it's a really sweet book, and I think that my friend Nicole referred it to me because she knows that I'm a man of an age who lives alone with his cat, who is very fond of his cat. So this is a story of Miyu, a woman living alone on her own for the first time, working professionally out of college, and she finds a little stray kitten in an empty lot in a box in the rain. So it's all very sweet and romantic, beautifully drawn, very gently paced. There's not a lot of it. I would describe it as a slice of life piece, because it doesn't really do anything more than perhaps affirm the young women who are reading this manga on the way to work. Because it's probably a story that, it's about an October Tom Soda. I looked at it like, okay, what is the point of this? Who's the audience? And what type of traction does it have, you know, in popular consciousness? And, you know, this is definitely, at first blush, I'm like, well, this is not for me. This is not for me at all. And I start reading, I'm like, oh, yeah, I can relate to that. Oh, yeah, look how lonely she is. Oh, yeah, sitting there
not
holding her kitty, watching TV,
like
eating popcorn. Yeah, okay. Uh-huh. Oh, there she's crying. Oh, that's great. Okay.
This is making my recommendation look kind of bad. The reason the reason why I suggested it for you is she's dealing with like social constraints and things of like, you know, having to be a certain way, having expectations, and having pressure and depression and dealing with different emotional things and having the most unconditional love in her feline friend.
Right.
And so I thought that there were some parallels there that you could maybe empathize with.
Of course,
you know,
but that's still crying stuff. That's still crying stuff.
I enjoy how you're just like, nah, not for me. And then midway through, you're like, it and me.
Oh, yeah. So, but it made me wonder, what is this part of some type of genre of young, not to be trite, but young women and their cats manga? And the reason why I ask this is that, you know, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a collector, and I've heard this.
Yeah.
And for a while, I, you know, got mired in collecting Gashapon, Japanese machine toys. And, you know, there are, like, exquisitely crafted animal collections, and some of them are little domestic kitties. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, would this be, is it the same audience? Would you be, like, you know, reading this book and collecting your kitty Gashapon in Japan? Or would that be the same audience?
Cats are all over the place in the media.
It's a broad net.
It's a very broad net.
So, yes, but I wouldn't make that the focus.
Not pigeonhole it.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the recommendation. It's a sweet little book. I was wondering, is Nicole roping me into a series? No, it's self-contained.
Yep.
Will we be able to sell you more manga?
Will you be able to? I have manga. I have plenty of manga in my home.
Manga doesn't count.
No, but I'm like, I've got like Lone Wolf and Cub and Samurai Executioner, and yeah, okay, there's no kitties. And
like 20 volumes of one series doesn't count as a lot of manga.
I'm a hero.
Okay.
But still, definitely. No
Ooh.
Crying cream. So yeah, this is sweet. I liked it very much. I got this at the local public library, and was really happy to find it there. Yeah.
I actually, before I recommended it to you, I checked the library because I know you love the library system.
You devoted a lot of headspace to
read it, and I was inspired, and I thought maybe you would get something out of it.
Yeah. No,
some
I got a lot
enjoyment.
Out of it.
So I did
Absolutely.
My research.
A friend of mine was staying at my place, and she picked it up and read it cover to cover, and she thoroughly enjoyed it.
It's been very popular in our store as well.
Great.
So,
see, this reminds me of Todd Browning's Freaks. One of us.
That's right. That's the song we sing.
Okay, she and her cat. Thank
she
you,
and her
Cole.
Cat.
Chris Casso, what do you got for us?
So I've been keeping on top of the new Justice League title. At first, I wasn't in the mood to. I was kind of like, I don't want to do this. It's written by Snyder, and it did disappoint me that the art changed like three times already. It starts with Jim Cheung, who I really like, and then he's never to be seen again 6 issues later. And then you get Doug Monkey doing one issue, which was great, but then mostly you have one or two other guys, and they're solid. But if you hate bouncing artists and inconsistency, then you might not want to check it out. The main reason I want to talk about it is because I am convinced that Snyder is probably scripting these, but I feel that Geoff Johns is ghost plotting.
Okay.
But there's no credit whatsoever. But I've never read a book before where I'm just like, this isn't this guy. Mm. It's nothing he cares about. It's not things I'm convinced he knows, but there's these little tips and clues that it must be written by Geoff Johns. Certain characters that nobody else gives a poop about.
Rats Patootie.
Besides Geoff Johns. Like, he brings up the turtle, the Silver Age Flash villain, the turtle.
Whoa.
And no one's brought up that character in 12 years except for Geoff Johns and his last Flash run.
Do you think this is a secret thing? Like, maybe Geoff Johns is in trouble and he's trying to tell us that he needs help?
This is the hidden scream for help through the multiverse.
I'm locked in a warehouse. They're forcing me to plot here.
Grant Morrison is trapped in the multidimensional warehouse. So it actually is very entertaining, and it deals with Lex Luthor forming a new Injustice League and doing a bunch of weird things where he's trying to go to the source wall, and the source wall's been broken, and he has a relic that might give him the edge to take over the universe. He went to the future and he saw a version of reality where Lex Luthor is worshipped as a god, so of course he wants that. And he gets like Gorilla Grodd with him, Black Manta, Cheetah, and the Joker. And it's doing very clever things, and it's doing that thing that Geoff Johns does, which is taking plot devices and using them as tools and making weird alchemy mixes of characters or ideas you've never seen before. So that is why I actually am interested in it. And he just recently hearkened to Brightest Day and like all the Color Lanterns. So I'm like, it has to be Geoff Johns, because I just don't know why Snyder would care.
So you got two issues in your hand. What issues are they?
This is like 1 in 5. I was going to have number 6 because I just read that. That's the one that like pushed me over the edge of being convinced it's Jeff Johns. ghost plotting, at least, like whispering things into people's ears like, use Black Adam.
Why?
Because he's Black Adam.
Are they standalone stories? Is that why you...
No, it's one big chunk. No, it's just I just grabbed a couple so I can visual blah blah blah.
Okay.
So yeah, and anything with Gorilla Grodd, I'm down with that.
There's a great... Chris likes the apes.
Oh yeah, yeah. Especially the fact that so they bring back the turtle, but the turtle's been turned into a baby who can slow people down and do something else. And so he's teamed up with Grodd, and Grodd has one.
So they live in turtle time?
Yes, they could do that. That's great.
Oh, you're so pleased with yourself.
But I was more happy with the what are those things that people fathers wear when they have the baby in front of them?
A Bjorn?
Yeah.
Snuggly?
Gorilla Grodd is wearing a Bjorn that has a baby in it, and he's using the baby as a weapon. So it's pretty great.
Oh man!
For that alone.
I don't want to pick up another comic book.
Just get the,
isn't
do
that the worst when you're like, oh, I want to read this now?
Man, that
yeah,
really
that's
great.
Exactly where I was.
There's
I'm
so
like,
many things
I don't
want to.
I don't have anything major against Snyder. I just don't want to be reading much more. Yeah. And so I was just like, I don't want to be. Wait, this doesn't feel like Snyder. Why am I suddenly interested? So if you want this has me feeling good about Justice League in a way I haven't felt since. 1999 to 2000, whatever.
Are you serious?
Grant Morrison's
really?
Run. It feels a little bit like Grant Morrison's having fun.
Yeah.
It unlike Jeff Johns trying to sound like Alan Moore, Jeff Johns sounding like Grant Morrison sounds more interesting.
I would have to agree with you.
It comes off better. And I keep saying that as if this is Jeff Johns. Okay. It is. But it's Snyder, you know. So let's say it's Snyder being Grant Morrison via Jeff Johns.
Dang it.
So, all right. Justice League making Chris feel things for the first time in 20 years.
Yes.
I feel like it's like a Dr. Octopus Spider-Man situation. Yeah. You know?
He put his brain inside
there's
Snyder's.
Some sort of like spirit of... Inside of
Jim Lee and Dan Didio were just like, you're not writing Justice League. Like, but I must.
We have
How
the technology. We can.
Freaky Friday's about to happen.
Yeah. Stop. Turtle time.
Yes.
All right, Nicole, what do you got for us this week?
A brand new title that came out as of the recording of this that is published by Image. It's called Crowded, and it's the first issue. It is. Script and design is by Christopher Sabella, and pencils are by Rose Stein. Ted Brandt does the inks, and Trona Farrell does colors. And it's a series that is for the modern age where everything has an app, and there is a girl who everything has an app, including hitmen. So I should just start with that. And you can crowdfund people getting hits put on them.
Oh, my.
It's called Crowded. It's part of, it's in the title. And so there's this girl who supposedly makes all of her living by doing, you know, like the dog walking and the Uber lifting and all that kind of stuff. And like there's an app for everything. You can just kind of do whatever, even dating apps. And then you call it a day for the, you know, after that. So she has people have raised over $1 million to kill this girl. And she goes on to an app called Defend, where you can hire somebody to defend you. And she gets one of the lowest rated people. It's like 1.4 stars. And everyone's like, oh, this person has just got terrible customer service, you know. But they're actually pretty good at defending, so they take her under, there's a bit of negotiating because they're just like, wait, why do you have this big hit on you? But ultimately, she decides that she's going to defend this girl. But you don't really know why people have made such a huge hit on her. Obviously, she's awful in some capacity, but it hasn't quite been unfolded yet. And the art has got a lot of whimsy to it. It's really interesting. The premise, I think, is pretty fun. For modern age sort of take on you know, hated people. So I definitely will be following this one. It was really fun.
Cool. Yeah. All right.
Credit. Thank you, Nicole. Mm-hmm. Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time, but before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicextension.com. Send us an email at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. I want to extend another thank you to Mr. Tom Stewart for joining us
today. Thank you, Tom.
And put your quiz hats on. Everybody, it's quiz time. This week, our questions come to us from Mr. Cole Hornaday. Lay it on us, Cole.
So, as I currently have my nose buried in my post-Comics Code Monster Week oeuvre of Lee, Lieber, Ditko, and Kirby from those dim days of Atlas Comics before Marvel Comics was actually a thing, I thought it would be fun to do some delving into a giant monster fun facts and Fin Fang Foom. I shall call this quiz Mega Monster A-Go-Go, or Howdy Do, Kaiju. Come on.
No.
First up, between 1958 and 1961, the Atlas House of Ideas, doesn't quite have the same ring though, does it? Released an automatopoeic deluge of monsters with names like Dragoom, Moomba, Mechano, Mummex, Giganto, Goom, and Magoom, Son of Goom, in anthology titles like Tales of Suspense and Tales to Astonish. Some of these characters received a second lease on life when Atlas became Marvel Comics and superheroes became the dominant industry genre. For example, this monarch from Planet X and Master of Wood, who would eventually become the lovable monosyllabic sidekick to a psychotic raccoon.
Who is Groot?
Who is Groot? Groot, the monster from Planet X, was created by Stan Lee, Larry Lieber, and Jack Kirby. Originally appeared in Tales to Astonish number 13 in 1960. Here's another one. Once referring to himself as Hulk and later the Titan, this alien conqueror was one of the few Lee, Lieber, Kirby creations to make that leap from Atlas Monster of the Week to a furry and fully fledged member of the Marvel Universe. Can you name that bad guy?
Zemnu
the wow. Titan, yes, also known as Zemnu the Hulk, first appeared in Journey into Mystery number 62 in November of 1960. Zemnu is an alien who has attempted to conquer the Earth numerous times and has battled, surprise, surprise, the Incredible Hulk, Defenders, Wonder Man, and also appeared in the Hulk Agents of Smash animated series. The more you know.
There's a lot of stuff that showed up in that cartoon. Yeah. It's weird.
I've never seen an episode.
It's interesting.
Like it?
It's interesting what they put in there.
Okay. Agents of Smash.
All the Hulks.
It's an acronym.
And I, well, yeah. Of course.
Now firmly implanted in our modern nerd lexicon, this term originally referred to monsters and creatures from ancient Japanese legends and has come to define a film genre encompassing giant monsters, radioactive or otherwise, usually attacking major cities and engaging the military and others in battle. What is that term?
Kaiju?
Kaiju, from the Japanese strange beast, or daikaiju, which roughly translates to giant strange beast. It's a subgenre of tokusatsu entertainment, a Japanese term for live-action film or television drama that uses special effects. The word originally originated from the Chinese book Classic of Mountains and Seas. And I didn't get when that book was originally published. We can imagine it was probably predates the printing press.
Cole is in his element.
I am. It's terrible. Following the international success of Toho's Gojira in 1954, film companies the world over tried their hand at joining the kaiju genre. I'm going to name a giant monster movie and ask you to identify its country of origin.
Oh,
hint, it's not Japan. Now, first up, Gorgo. Where did Gorgo come from?
Vietnam?
Nope. Gorgo is a British-American film produced by King Brothers and released in 1961. So Gorgo is actually British kaiju. Mm. British kaiju. How about Yongari, Monster from the Deep? Man, Chris, I thought these would just be rolling off your tongue.
No, I don't know. Oh.
Yongari was made in South Korea by Kukdong Entertainment Company and released in 1967. How about Reptilicus?
Ooh. Oh, that's...
I just saw that.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Keep going further into Scandinavia.
that's right, because it's dubbed.
You're right.
Right.
It was
it's Swedish. Isn't
it's Danish, or Danish, Dutch, rather. Actually, correct me here. It's from Denmark. That would make it...
Danish?
Danish, okay. Dutch is Holland. Yeah.
I was going to say Latin because Reptilica sounds like a Latin genus species.
The new MST3K did that.
Yeah. Reptilicus was produced in Denmark and produced by Saga Studios and released in 1961. Okay, this one is really, really tough. I don't expect you to get this, unlike the others. Pulgasari.
Russian.
Nope. It's from North Korea. Pulgasari is now a cult film. It's a kaiju propaganda film produced
They're
by
all
North.
Cult films.
Yeah, that's true. produced by the North Korean government, released in 1985. There's actually a documentary about the making of the film Pulgasari because Kim Jong Il kidnapped the director from South Korea, a gentleman named Shin Sang Ok, to create for him a blockbuster. And the documentary is called The Lovers and the Despot. And apparently, this is something that happened all the time.
Kidnap his wife, too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I heard of that, yeah.
I still have not seen it. I would like to see it. Lastly, final round. This is a toughie. Who is your favorite kaiju and why?
Oh, God.
Here we go. Chris, who's your favorite kaiju?
Who's your favorite kaiju?
I mean, Godzilla's pretty great.
Yeah.
It's pretty great, but I need time to think about
that. Okay, well, what about the big hammer knife-headed guy from
Pacific Rim?
Pacific
Rim. He's pretty great, too.
You sunk a lot of money in that action figure.
I did.
I mean, that action figure is almost
really
as big as my
car. Yeah, I like him.
Yeah. What's his name?
Knifehead.
Knifehead.
Well, because the kaiju are pretty much just like levels, right?
They're levels.
They're just levels. Yeah.
Ben, you got one?
I don't know the names of any, but I'm going to... All I can think of are just the dinosaurs from Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, those are kaiju to me because they're just big monsters.
Mm-hmm. So and they're not real dinosaurs because they were made with amphibian DNA.
Exactly. Yeah. They're freaks of nature.
They're
so I'm
totally
gonna,
freaks of nature.
I'm going to go ahead and say the Tyrannosaurus Rex from the first Jurassic Park.
Excellent.
That moment at the very end when the thing falls down.
It's tough.
Yes.
We're going to come back in a later episode.
This is not an easy question.
This is not an easy one for you?
Okay, so there are those guys that kind of look like Sasquatches.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember what movie they were in.
The Gargantuas.
There it is, the Gargantuas. Yeah. Those guys are pretty cool.
That film is actually a sequel to...
It's kind of a weird one.
Frankenstein Conquers the World, right? I'm looking at Tom. He can't help me.
I don't know.
And I did not learn that the War of the Gargantuas is actually a sequel to a giant Frankenstein movie made in Japan.
That's weird.
Yeah, totally weird.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Is the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man a kaiju?
Yes.
After Ghostbusters? Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Tom, you got
good
one?
Good answer.
This is a bit out of my nerd garden. I'm afraid. No, my favorite kaiju is Raymond Burr.
Mm-hmm.
He's big, and he played monsters.
Yes, yeah.
Then he slimmed down and played Perry Mason.
Mm-hmm.
Then he got into a wheelchair and played a guy in a wheelchair.
Ironside.
Yeah.
His name was Ironside.
I know that.
Yeah, and then he retired to his...
And it was a nerd test.
Was it? You were looking at
and
me.
And you either passed or flunked.
Okay, well, and then he retired to his vineyard with his husband and lived out the rest of his life making wine.
Well, then he came back for the Perry Mason films.
Oh, okay. And, you know, Tom should know because he collects all the Perry Mason books.
I do.
Yeah. Just one more.
Sadness.
Here's some cross-pollination. I have a signed Perry Mason book, signed by Earl Stanley Gardner. And tucked inside when I got it was a program for Earl Stanley Gardner's funeral.
Whoa.
The book was signed to his nephew. Whoa. You know, to my nephew, whatever his name was, you know, your uncle Earl Stanley Gardner. And evidently the nephew put the program inside it and then ended up selling it on the interwebs, and that's where I got it.
Wow.
Crazy.
It all's a circle.
The circle of
collecting life.
Yes. Well, that's all I had for my quiz time.
All right, well, thank you, Cole, and thank you for listening. Thanks again to Tom for joining us, and we will see you next week.